Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 273, I am very lucky, honored to have John Horsfall on the podcast. This man, he is, how can I put it? He is an adventuring soul who is a bit psychotic. Let me just say this. Look, I'm about to do the London Marathon this weekend. And yes, this man has run 27 marathons in a month. He's gone across Kenya solo to it, right? And yeah, basically, he cycled from London to Asia without any money. He also is a host and, well, founder and host of the Modern Adventurer podcast, as well as being seemingly being a nice guy. I'm not too sure what he might do in the weekends and other things apart from adventuring. How are you today, John?
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be on the show, and thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I'm glad to have you here. Look, we got through our technical difficulties and such like that. And yeah, you've told me about your epic escape, your most daring one, from Acton to Hammersmith. Well done. Yeah, I have to ask, you've basically, back in the day, it was landscape architect. How did you get from there to basically, yes, this modern day adventurer, doing 27 marathons and going from London to Asia? How did that happen, you crazy man?
Well, very good question. I think looking back, I mean, I've always absolutely loved the outside world. Being outside in nature has always been something I love. I grew up in the countryside. I'm not a London city boy, as the listeners might think from the Acton Hammersmith intro. But I sort of had this love, and I studied landscape architecture and was very interested in sort of design and everything. But what I realized very quickly was I was spending a lot of time inside rather than outside. And I suppose my sort of love of these sort of adventures first came back in 2012, when after finishing at uni, I decided to cycle across America, having never cycled more than 10 miles in my life. You sort of cycle down to the village shop or something. But didn't really go much further than that. And the idea sort of came to me. And through that sort of journey, I discovered this idea of backcountry adventuring, as one might say, or exploring. This idea that you'd just go off into the middle of nowhere. When I say middle of nowhere, I mean there was no cycling route. I was just heading out for the sake of heading out. And I was meeting all these people who had never come across a touring cyclist, in the middle of America, who were just like, what are you doing here? How have you managed to come all the way to my town of Columbiana in Ohio? Why are you here? And in gathering and speaking to all these sort of local people, rather than in the sort of touristy areas, I sort of fell in love with this idea and this idea of really discovering the real country. And I felt through that time of cycling across America, I really got to know the country and completely fell in love with the American people. And I know America gets a bad rap from time to time. And in actually planning the journey, I had so many negative comments about America of it's very dangerous. The American people, they're a bit. But actually, when I went into the sort of backcountry, you actually found the real, I'm talking proper Midwest. Mm. The hospitality and the generosity of the American people was just second to none. And I suppose after completing that journey, I came back, I started my work in landscape architecture. And typing away on the computer, clicking on the mouse, my mind was just flowing with ideas. And eventually it got a bit too much. And I just sort of made the jump and decided to do another one. And that's where sort of Kenya and that sort of life sort of took me, really.
But okay, at the time when you went, okay, yeah, you know, Billy, I can, well, a clear indication he is not a city boy is Village Shop. That is, anyone in the UK understands that, anywhere else? Yeah. But Village Shop, doing it like riding a bike from your Village Shop here, there, everywhere. Like, you know what I mean? Not a major cyclist, but to like go, okay, yeah, America, I'm doing it. Did you just like, okay, was it a thing you planned over a series of months, or was it just a case of a whim and you were off?
Okay, I'll be perfectly honest. It was literally the day I finished university. I wanted to do something big, and maybe that was coming from a sort of, I don't know, this idea of wanting to prove myself or do something significant. And that was sort of the mentality of it. And the idea was really like either to cycle to India, and then I realized I actually really wanted to go to America and discover America. And so this sort of idea of maybe I go around, and eventually I was like, well, that sounds quite a long way. Maybe I just go from New York to San Francisco. And that was the sort of idea in my head. And I know you laugh, but I was literally like, that's a stupid idea. That's going to go. But weirdly, and this is the crazy thing, is like, some of these ideas, they sort of grow on you and they sort of end up consuming you. And so this sort of idea grew and grew and grew. And then I just remember saying, right, 6 weeks, I'm going. And I booked the ticket. It was to take a sort of break. And I bought a bike. And I bought the panniers. Just give your listeners an idea of how unprepared I was. I didn't know much about cycling or this sort of mechanics of it. And I bought some tennis shoes because I heard like cycling in tennis shoes was quite, because they had quite a hard sole. And then my friend was like, no, you really need some cleats to cycle because it's much better for you. And instead of going up, you've got the balance of both. And I was like, oh, okay, never worn cleats. And I just like to say, when you first start on cleats, having never done it, it is so difficult because you get to a little, you know, traffic light and you're there ready to just put your foot down, and then suddenly it's trapped in and you're like, oh my God, oh my God. And then you collapse over. And that happens so many times. So just to give your listeners an idea of how naive and unprepared I was, that's an example.
All right. No. And like, this is the thing, don't get me wrong. I laugh because it's like one of those things. I'm not laughing at the fact you did it. I'm like, basically, it's one of those things where I have to like laugh because it's an amazing thing you've done. Because look, many people talk about, I want to do this, I'm going to do that. They come up with an elaborate plan. And like, this plan is big, it's gaudy, and you just like look at it all and you're like, all right. To execute just one small component out of it is immensely difficult and like somewhat surreal. But to like go, okay, yeah, okay, I've finished university. I want to do a bike ride of a significant meaning. And you looked at the countries of like your different options and you went, okay, America. And you went, okay, do it in 6 weeks. What do you know about riding? Jack. So, and I to like go, right, okay, let me do this. And when by just consulting one friend, like, yeah, you might want to change your shoes, you might want to do this. Like, too many people, I think, just rely on the simple fact that I haven't done it, I don't have the experience. So that's the thing, what should stop me, rather than sort of like going, let's embrace the adventure and go for it. You know?
I completely agree. I think I was actually speaking today about one of my trips this morning to someone who I just met. And I said, if you analyzed and did all the research, everything that could go wrong, you would never do it. And I say this carefully because I don't want people to sort of run off to Afghanistan to do a marathon, back-to-back marathons without understanding the sort of place. But sometimes the sort of negativity of other people who may or who probably, because I find a lot of time people put a place down without ever experiencing it. You know, when someone said, and I've had this a few, because I've been very fortunate in the last 5 years before COVID to travel. And I've been to a lot of places which people wouldn't say are particularly nice or hospitable or friendly towards, let's say, the West. And actually, what you find is a lot of people say how awful a place is without ever realizing or ever being there. And so they speak without experience.
Yes.
And so the best thing you can do is speak to people who know. You know, you wouldn't take financial advice off, I don't know, your barber. You would take financial advice off someone. You would always try and stick with the knowledge of what someone else who's been there and done that.
Mm.
And so with that, I suppose, yeah, there was a huge sense of naivety because of some of the places I was going, some of the, you know, long trucks, you know, hitting people. I think at the time when I did it, James Cracknell, the Olympic rower, had just been hit in America cycling across. Mm. And so, of course, there's a lot of scare stories. And of course, your family and friends don't want you to get hurt. And so they will do their best to try and lay off the idea. But I think when doing this, you do have to have a sense of strong why. Your why has to be pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
And to go and do something, it was an incredible trip, but you know, there are times where it's really lonely, it's really hard, it's, you know, it was 100 degrees plus most of the time
in the summer,
summer Fahrenheit. So you're going through like the Nevada desert, and I think it was like 107 108 degrees Fahrenheit. I know this because of the American system with Fahrenheit. I think Celsius, it's like 40 something.
Yeah. How did the wheels on your bike survive?
I got more flat tires in that desert than I think I've ever got in my life, and still to this day.
Oh, dear God. No, but like, this is the thing. When you say yes, your why has to be strong. And often there are people, like, whys come in many forms. Like, basically, you've got your strong why, which is basically, to me, it's like gravity pulls you along. And you've got your fuzzy why. And your fuzzy why, it's one of the whys you've got to keep pushing. And eventually you will run out of motivation and it will like fade away. But like, yeah, to go out there by yourself, what was that? You had that why, like, because you wanted to do something significant. But what would you say were some of the, like, takeaways you got from that first trip? Because America, they say it's very similar to the UK, but it's different in other ways. But what would you say would be a key lesson or two you learned?
With myself, or what I learned about America?
With yourself, with what you learned about America.
Probably with myself, I realized I had more determination and drive to then I ever sort of imagined for myself. I realized, you know, when cycling, I could get, well, just to give an example, you know, I always take the 5 a.m. example. If you get up at 5 a.m. to sort of cycle 70 miles, if mm-hmm. I said to you tomorrow, let's go and do that, you might be like, oh, that's a long way. And like going for a run or something, and you might sort of, you put all these obstacles in your way. But when you're so sort of set, focused in your mind, you can get up. You know, if someone listening wants to go to the gym at 5 a.m., they might be like, well, that is unnecessarily early. But if you're getting up at 5 a.m. to go to on a holiday to Barbados, you'd be like, oh, I'm there. I'm ready at 4:30, ready for the taxi. So in terms of like, I realized I had this sort of self-discipline and drive, which I sort of had to learn. But I suppose one of the best lessons I learned from that trip was just how amazing and hospitable the American people were.
Mm.
You know, we in the, in Britain sort of laugh at their sort of educational system and, you know, the fact that they're not very global in their outlook. But actually, in middle America, they are some of the friendliest, most hospitable people in the world. I used to like cycle and I'd be in the middle of Nevada and I'd stop at a petrol station. I'd be waiting there and a woman would just come up to me and go, "What are you doing?" And I'd be like, "Well, I'm cycling across the country." She'd be like, "Oh, well, here's $20. Have a steak on me in Nevada," because not Nevada, sorry. Nevada? Nebraska. That's the one. Because Nebraska is really famous for their steak. So please have a steak on me. And I thought this was a one-off, but this happened again and again and again. You know, I'd be in a cafe. So the couple on the left would say, "What are you doing?" I'd have a chat with them. I stuck out like a sore thumb, unfortunately, because I'm 6'3". I have a British accent. I was wearing all Lycra. So imagine in your little local town, some guy walks in with a massive bike and complete Lycra and looks like he hasn't showered in 10 days. You might take pity on him. But, you know, it just happened again and again. I was offered to go to like people's recital and they would just say, "What are you doing?" Have a quick chat with them. I'd get on, I'd have a meal. And then at the end of it, I'd ask the waitress for the bill. And she'd be like, "Don't worry, that couple that was sitting there picked up your tab." And I'd be like, I can't even thank them. They're gone. They just did it out of their own accord. And it just happened again and again and again. And it was a real eye-opener for me just to see this sort of incredible generosity and how kind they were. And sort of changed my perspective of how one should sort of view the world in a sense of like, you know, we are bombarded with negativity in the media. And actually, there are such amazing people up and down the world, in and around the world, who are kind, generous, and everything. And I suppose that was probably, and also California is like a different country to the rest of America. That was another thing.
No, like I often find when you are on the East Coast or the West Coast of America, it is two different planets. And then you got Texas, which is its own individual planet.
Yeah.
In its entirety. Now, I have to ask, this is most probably going to be my last question about your American adventure. But like, yeah, how long did it take you to get from the East Coast to the West Coast? Or did you do it the other way around? Because you mentioned New York to San Francisco.
So people who know the winds in America will say, "Well, you idiot, why would you go from New York to San Francisco?" But I was sort of trying to go round at the time, do around the world trip. And so I went New York to San Francisco.
Okay.
And so I had the wind in my face the entire time. And anyone who cycled with panniers will know it's like a sail on your back or a parachute. And so the wind just sort of takes you and you're traveling at like 4 miles an hour when the wind really picks up. What was the other question? I can't remember.
Now, basically, I asked you how long it took you to get.
Oh, yeah. And so it took me 50 days. So it was probably averaging about 80 miles a day.
Wow.
But for anyone listening or anyone who has any plans to do that, I would say take your time. Take your time. You know, I look back and I had an amazing time, but to sort of just have those few moments where you could sort of just relax with people. I was invited to so many things, which I ended up being like, no, I've got to get on. But actually, if you can just take your time and enjoy the moments, because unless you're going to cycle across America in 10 days, which would just be really quite bleak, you're not going to break any records. So you might as well just enjoy the experience and absorb yourself into the culture and everything that goes with being in America or wherever you decide to do a trip.
I love it. Love it. like this is the thing. I think this this may have been like the sort of gateway to becoming a person of character, to say the least. But oh my Lord. So when you got back to the UK, apart from family members slapping you, like going, don't ever do this again. What was like the sort of general vibe from your friend? Look, because look, everyone acts one way before you like do something like this. And it's like, oh, you're crazy. Don't do it. You don't. Blah, 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 blah. What was the response when you got back?
It's difficult to say. I think, as you say, the idea was slightly mental. And when I got back, I had done also cycled down New Zealand. I finished America saying I will never sit on a bike ever again. And then a week later, I'm in New Zealand cycling. And so when I got back, I suppose the response was like, what's it? It's a difficult to say because I suppose people then start to sort of be like, oh, well, when you first do these things, everyone sort of said, you can't do that. You know, you've never done anything like that. You don't do it. But, and then as soon as you've broken that barrier of what you can do, anything else, they're just like, oh, okay, you can probably do that. and so I suppose it's sort of just one, all the sort of naysayers amongst friends who were slightly a bit skeptic about whether I could do it. As soon as you announce maybe you're doing another thing, rather than be like, oh, they're just like, oh, well, you know, have a good time or something like that. It's already ingrained that one can do it. So what? But before you actually break through, it's hard to sort of explain. But as soon as you break through that sort of barrier of being able to do something like that, everyone's going to sort of, you know, say, you can't do that. You can't do that. And
oh, you froze for just a moment there, John.
Sorry. No, I was saying that, you know, until you can do it, everyone will say you can't do it. And as soon as you can do it, they leave you alone.
So this is the thing. Now, you casually dropped in that you cycled through New Zealand after swearing you wouldn't like get on a bike again. Now, like what's giving you this drive? It can't just simply be like, I just want to do something of substance. What is giving you this drive to go out there and do these things? What do you think it is?
Well, I think New Zealand was different. I think America was very much geared towards A to B, New York to San Francisco. And it's, as the old cliche terms, it's not the destination, it's the journey. And I suppose with that bizarre cliche, I sort of learned that actually it is a journey. San Francisco and New York were just, you know, places. Yeah. The whole experience was actually in America. And so with New Zealand, I still had my bike. And originally I had no idea, no intention to use my bike, but I had it. I had the panniers. I geared myself up for touring and I was just going to sort of leave it and just carry it around with me. But I suddenly realized that New Zealand's a great cycling place. It was spring, which is basically the winter, and it was freezing. But I thought, well, why not? And it was a bit more of a, because I'd learned that one should take their time with this.
Yes.
New Zealand was a very much more casual thing. I was, you know, when I got stuck in the mountains with snow blizzard in shorts and t-shirts and got rescued by these sort of seasonaires, when I found a lodge, I just sort of went and knocked on the door. It wasn't so much like, oh, I have to carry on. It was more like, well, if I'm going to get hitchhike and be able to just hitchhike down a bit, 100 miles to the next place, and avoid being in a snowstorm, I'm going to do it. So the mentality was very different from America in terms of how I went into cycling.
You strike me as a person, if there's an easy way of doing things and a hard way of doing things and a very hard way of doing things, you're going to go with the very hard way of doing things. It's like going against the jet stream, like going to like riding in like, yeah, winter. Like, it's like, hey, wow. So, okay, look, with regards to, I like you, man. I like you. Like, look, with regards to like doing this adventure and like, yeah, just taking your time, getting out there and doing it. And like, I have to agree, the journey is the more important thing. And people like go, oh yeah, the physical journey. No, but it's the journey in any endeavor you choose to take in life. It's like the start point and the end point are important as they are, but the things, the lessons you learn across the way, along that journey is everything. So many things, what can like learn and grow from. Like, with regards to like, yeah, your time at university compared to your time, like, well, even the first year out after university, would you say like, because university times, we grow and expand on an exponential rate. But would you say how much growing and growth and lessons you learned about yourself, was it more in the journeys you took, or was it a case of you was like 50-50 from university?
I would say university was a eye-opener, but I would say I learned a lot more about myself. I learned a lot about life at university. I learned so much more about myself and my capabilities by doing these trips. You put yourselves in these horrific situations at times, and how you get out of it and how you manage fear, how you manage expectation, how you manage all sorts of things, emotion, is far more. I learned so much more from that trip in terms of about myself and the growth of myself from those trips than I did at university.
I have to ask, like, what was one of the key low points you had while you were doing your like cycle, like across America, and what was one of your highest points?
So, low points. I mean, so of course, I suppose there were maybe two low points, but not there. What it one was a scary moment.
Okay.
So the low point was probably like, because I did a little bit of training, not a lot, by day three or four, and cycling 80 miles every day, my legs had become like jelly. I felt like my muscles couldn't even withstand my weight because they were so tired. And so I sort of remember it was just becoming so lethargic and everything. And I'd sort of get out and go to the supermarket and try walk. And that sort of feeling that you had no muscle holding your legs up, so you felt like you were just about to collapse. And so that sort of put a bit of a downer on this sort of headspace in terms of traveling, because you're sort of just lethargic. You're just going through the motions. And that was at the start of the trip. And then after about sort of 7 or 8 days, your legs have sort of got used to it. You're more in a motion. And then, you know, your legs are strong to put in 100 miles, to put in 80 miles a day. But before that, it's quite, what's the word?
Emotional.
It's quite challenging.
it's like, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the scary points was this. So I went through, where was it? Pennsylvania. into Maryland. And in Maryland, I'm going up this hill called to Frostburg, Maryland. It's in the middle of nowhere. I doubt any of the listeners will know. But anyway, I came to the top of this mountain. It's about 1,500. It's not, you know, a big rocky mountain. It's just in Pennsylvania. It's quite hilly. And when I get there, I get to an inn, and I was thinking, okay, I could probably just camp here or something. And as I got there, there's a guy on the balcony, and he's having a cigarette or a cigar. And he sort of looks at me coming up, sweating buckets, having climbed this mountain. It's the evening, it's getting dark. And anyway, I'm in my Lycra, and he goes, he asked me, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm just looking for the owner of the inn and seeing if I could, you know, have a place to stay. And he's like, you know, I know an accent when I hear it. Are you from Texas? And I was like, no, I'm not. And he's like, I'm just fucking with you. I know you're from Great Britain. Anyway, so I get chatting to this guy, and at this time my route's roughly down the Mississippi down to St. Louis, and he's like, we get chatting, he's like, oh, I live in Chicago. And so I'm like, oh, well, you know. And he's like, oh my god, it's the best, you know, I live in this place called like the Ukrainian Village, and it's like the Soho of London. It's really cool, so if you're ever up, come and stay. And he was like, you know, I'm just here with my two kids or something. So I was like, all right, sweet. Anyway, as I said earlier, it got really, really hot in America. And every day, like St. Louis never went above 100, never went below 100 for like 16 days straight. So I ended up trying to go further and further north towards Chicago. Anyway, so I was like, okay, well, this guy's offered me a place in Chicago. I'm going to go. So I give him a call. I'm like, I'm heading to Chicago, probably be there in 2 days or so. So would love to come and stay. He's like, oh, awesome. You know, I'm here for the weekend. You know, I'll get a place for you and everything. So I start cycling anyway. Again, I'm, you know, it's very, very hot. I'm very, very tired. And in the evening, he gives me his address, which is, I don't know, let's just say 185 St. Martin's Avenue or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, St. Martin's Avenue. So I type into Google St. Martin's Avenue. Wait, I think it was something else, St. George Street or something. What I didn't know is that Chicago is long. And so 1517 is like, this street is 5 miles long. And on one side, you've got the ghetto. And on the other side is actually really, really nice. So I typed in St. Martin Street, and Google took me straight into the ghetto. And I'm cycling through it, being like, wow, this is really and really quite something. And you know, there's boarded up houses, broken glass all over the place. And I'm there in my Lycra, and you know, sticking out like a sore thumb. And people are there, you know, out in their groups. Anyway, I sort of stopped to sort of check my phone. And at this exact point, it sort of says, well, you're about 2.5 miles away from this point. To which I'm like, wow, okay. So this is clearly in the wrong place. And at that moment, my phone dies. It cuts out of battery. There's no battery packs at this time. So I'm now on my own. And suddenly this group in the corner are like, oi, what are you doing? And usually I'm very open and like, hey, you know, how's it going? And anyway, this time I decide maybe it's probably best I don't approach. So I sort of decide to just get my head down, and I was like, right, I'm just going to cycle on. And so I sort of wave to them, and then I just cycle on. And then he's like, shouts to his group to go and get me.
Oh, Chicago is a wild town.
And so I'm cycling, and I go down this street, and then I'm turning left, knowing that they're just behind me. And I'm cycling as fast as I can. Bear in mind, I've got about 50 kilos of stuff on me. Well, not 50, probably about 20. And I'm racing down. I see a cop car on the left, and I literally just cycle straight up to the cop car. And like it was almost that feeling of like when you haven't seen your mother in like 2 years, you just want to hug them. And anyway, so I get chatting to the cop, and he's like, "Whoa, you know, you're in the worst place possible. You know, you should be really careful." And I'm like, "I know that. Thank you." And so I get chatting with him, and eventually he's like, "You just need to go down there on the left." Anyway, I finally get to this place. Have a great weekend. But that moment, like, no one knew I had decided to take a detour to Chicago. No one had known that I was. So if something had happened, like, I don't know what. And it was that sort of idea of like, no one knew I was there.
Yeah, no, because this is the thing, what people don't realize about Chicago, like, it's one of the coldest places you can be in America in the winter.
Yeah.
It also is one of the hottest places you can be in the summer. But the heat tends to send people in Chicago a little bit loopy. Like, and it's quite a wild city. That's all I would say. It's a very wild city.
Yeah.
Depending where you are. And it sounds like you are in an area let's just say if it got wild.
Yeah. I would like to say, other than that little moment where like nothing did happen, it was more of like what could have happened. Well, it did happen. I got chased. But Chicago is a great city, and actually the inner city, the urban area is beautiful. Millennium Park, stunning place. And actually the architecture there is great. Maybe just avoid certain places.
Now, the real reason, the selfish reason why I got you on this podcast. No. You, sir. Okay. We've already established you got a bit of a wild character around you. Yeah, I think you must already would have got on well if you lived in like Chicago, to be absolutely honest. But yeah, what drove you or inspired you to do 27 marathons in a month?
So the idea, I suppose, came was I'd been to Kenya before and absolutely loved it, but I'd never explored it. And so I sort of took this sort of idea of America, of if you want to explore a place, explore it in a very unique way. And Kenya's not the size of America, you know, it's the size of the state. So I thought, and I just started getting into running. I'd always been quite active, quite sporty. I love football and tennis. And so, you know, fitness is what I love. Mm-hmm. And so I was generally quite fit already, but I just started getting into marathons. I'd say I'd got into marathons. I'd never done a marathon before it, but I was trying to get my body up to that sort of stage. And everyone had talked about this runner's high and, you know, what you get when you're like that. I still don't believe it.
If the runner's high, if it truly exists for you, you must be like taking it down like a children's cereal.
So I had this idea, and so I knew I wanted to explore Kenya in a unique way, and running I was getting into their big runners. So I thought, what about and I wanted to do another big thing, and I thought Kenya would be a good, what's the word, benchmark to propel this sort of journey. And so at the sort of time, I mean, Instagram was not much of a thing, but I was sort of posting on Instagram. And anyway, so I sort of had this idea and decided I'd just go for it. And I basically typed into Google Maps the Ugandan border in Mount Elgon and put in a town called Kilifi on the coast. Google Maps gave me a route. I sort of marked out, well, there's a little town there and a little town here. They're like 10 kilometers apart. I could probably stop for a bit of food, buy some snacks, etc. along the way. So I sort of roughly planned it. But what I didn't realize is that Kenya is not quite the same as like when you look at Google Maps in the UK, and these sort of 10 kilometer spacings, when you actually get there, are nothing more than a mud hut with a few avocados and bananas or something. So this sort of idea of me having lunch or snacking along the way was, what's the word? Didn't quite work out as I had planned it. But what I realized along the way was just, again, by doing this, I suddenly realized just how amazing the country was and how amazing the people were. And I sort of went up to the top and, you know, and also when you do this stuff, if you shout it from the rooftops amongst, I don't know, your family and people will just put you in touch with lots of people. They'll be like, oh, you know, I know Thingy, who knows Thingy, who has, you know, a little house up there. And so I was sort of being pawned off to one another. Anyway, my sister decided to come out as well. And I was doing this for a friend's charity out there called the Lewa Children's Orphanage. Right. The idea was that I would run to the orphanage, then run from the orphanage to there, so people could actually see where the money was going and everything. And so I flew out and did a bit of planning, try to get as many contacts as possible, you know, and see. And yeah, and then the first day came, and on the Ugandan border is in Mount Elgon, and Mount Elgon is a mountain. And this was my first ever marathon, or going above 43 kilometers or 43.2, whatever it is. And so I did 30 miles on the first day and was like, wow, that was absolutely brutal at altitude. And then the next day I had to get up and do the same again. And it was all pretty, pretty hard work. But along the way, you just meet some amazing people. On that first day, I had a guy who wanted to stop, have a chat, started singing to me. I had children running with me. You know, the policemen at little stops would sort of chat and be like, what are you doing? And then you'd get chatting. And like, I was doing this on my own. I had a little backpack with all my stuff in. So I was running with a backpack. And it just sort of snowballed from there, and people just kept pawning me off along the way. And so I didn't bring a tent. Because
what? It's like, what? Okay.
Bring a tent? And so along the way, out of 32, I only actually put myself up 8 days out of the 32, because people were just like, oh, I know someone down there, so yeah, you might be able to stay. And so that sort of process just kept happening. And, you know, it was just incredible, because you're seeing such a diverse country with so many, you know, beautiful landscapes, different areas, wildlife, etc. And so along the way, I'm not going to stand here and pretend like the running was a piece of cake. It was absolutely brutal. Like, absolutely brutal, you know, running marathon after marathon, day after day, is just really tough. And the problem is that my body wasn't quite prepared for it. And so, like, on day 7, I turned in and slightly sprained my ankle, and then I was getting like sharp pains in my quads and in my shins. And then on day 10, I suddenly realized I had quite bad shin splints in my left leg. And so it was like, right, need to take a lot of painkillers. And so literally as the days went on, I sort of started with like a little strap or bandage around my leg. And by the end, it was like a full bandage around my legs. And then on like day 13, I got food poisoning. We went into this place. And this is the difficult thing, is like, you're really hungry all the time. All the time, you're just constantly thinking about food, and I was definitely not getting the calories I needed in. And so I was staying with these people, and one of their favorite places was a thing called a nyachoma, which is barbecued meat. And like I was warned beforehand, just do not eat the meat from the streets. It's so bad for you and your stomach is just not accustomed to it. But they were like, this is our favorite place. This is the best food in town. So I was like, well, I'll take the risk. And, you know, it was food so fresh. You had chickens running under your feet and everything. And I think I had chicken and goat in this place. And, you know, it was devouring it all, huge portions.
I'm sure it was.
It was absolutely delicious. But the next day I was throwing up. I was being ill. But I, again, you know, any sane human being would be like, well, you've just got to stay in, wear it off. But I had an idea that I wanted to complete it in a month. And so on an empty stomach, I was like, right, I've just got to keep going. And it was pretty brutal running marathon for the next few days on an empty stomach. But I then stopped at like a place where this woman put me up. And I don't know why. It's really strange, and I'm sure your listeners would be like, oh, you know, what was he thinking? But when you sort of put yourself in like a mindset to do something like this, you're very like self-driven, you're very self-motivated, you don't really take comfort too well, because it sort of distracts you from what your intended target is, which is, I don't know, to complete marathons in 31 days, let's say. And so I had this, I was staying with this woman who was just being really motherly, and like I found it really, really difficult, because I was like, no, like, and she was making me go and do stuff when all I wanted to do was rest. And so again, like, one should have just stayed there a bit longer, but I found the whole experience just like really tough. So I was like, I just gotta keep moving. So he just kept pushing on, kept running. And then on like, I think it was day 16 or 17, I got in to Nairobi, which was like the halfway point. And I was like a skeleton. I had been staying with someone like 3 weeks earlier before I flew up, and their flatmate I'd been chatting to for like the evening, had dinner with them. And then when I opened the door, they're like, can I help you?
Oh no.
And they didn't even recognize me from like 3 weeks earlier. And so, yeah, I'd lost a lot of weight. And like when you lose, I don't know, a stone and a half in like 3 weeks, it's your body like so down. But I got some food in, I'd sort of slowly recovered. But this was one of the interesting things. And like one thing that you can just never prepare for on doing something like this was one of the politicians in Kenya had got wind of my story, had heard that some guy was doing this run across Kenya and was intrigued, and say, had got my number somehow and messaged me saying, when you're in Nairobi, come and see me. And of course, I had no idea who this guy was. I just knew he was some politician. And like, if someone had said, oh, you're going to go and see a camera, I don't know, an ivory, some politician who you'd never heard of, you'd just be like, all right, cool. So before I'd met him, I'd asked people like, who is this guy? And they're like, oh, you know, it's a guy called Stephen Colonzo, who used to be the vice president of Kenya. And of course, I'd never heard of him, but everyone I'd spoken to about was like, oh, you need to wear a suit, you need to wear this. But I only had a backpack and my running gear. I had one outfit, that was it. I maybe had like a little jumper in case it got cold, but like every day I wore the same thing day after day. And so like on one of these days, just before I'm about to leave Nairobi, I get a call from him saying, what are you doing tomorrow? Do you want to come in and see me? I was like, and what makes these sort of things interesting is like meeting people, the stories you tell of like the people you meet. So I was like, well, this is interesting. You know, this guy is supposedly the former vice president, you know, I'm not going to get an opportunity like this again. So I was like, yeah, I'll come in. So I go to the other side of Nairobi, I'm chatting with him, and he's like, okay, you know, so cool what you're doing. Well, let's go meet the media. And so I was sort of imagining, like, you know, there's some student journalist with the local newspaper who's doing a little story on a guy running across. But no, like, he's obviously about to launch his new campaign for election. And suddenly the media of every news channel are there in a room, cameras all pointing. He sits me down. I'm like, I think I'm slightly out of my depth here. I mean, I'm not sure what he expects. He's like, oh, you know, this is John. John's running across America, running across Kenya. Well, John, why don't you tell them what you're doing? I'm like, suddenly with all these news outlets just like focused in on me. And anyway, I sort of chat about what I'm doing, but felt completely, slightly overwhelmed. But like, it's just very interesting. Like, it's very interesting doing something like this where you can never prepare for something like that. And until you sort of do this thing, these sort of moments will happen, because that's what makes it exciting. And people will sort of go out the way to sort of help you. And he gave a really great donation to the charity I was doing. And then the next day I got up and kept running.
There you go. But like, this is the thing. I think when people like start doing things which challenge them or consider it's extraordinary to the sort of greater masses, they're, it's amazing how all of a sudden, the extraordinary, it attracts opportunities that you never actually would, as you say, expect to happen. The extraordinary, it's one of those things where it truly can elevate you onto new levels. You go, oh, I'm doing this one thing, and people go, that is extraordinary. But people want to be around it. People like to be around it. It's a case of if they can get touched by that small bit of light of that, they're all in. And it's one of those things where in this sort of day and age, you hear about people sort of doing this, that, the other, just sort of just above average. And people are like, oh, that's amazing. No, it's not. You're just doing above average. When you're going way beyond that, then you're like going, okay, wow. Because 27 marathons, like doing 30 miles back to back. Yeah, that's madness. How many pairs of running shoes did you get through? That's what I got to ask.
What's that?
How many pairs of running shoes did you get through?
I just the one. They were pretty worn by the end. But I'd only packed one pair, so... they were gone by the end, but yeah, I only packed one pair, again slightly unprepared, but I was just I suppose it's this sort of maybe this idea that you know, if you people are good, people are kind. And if you are in trouble, people will always be there willing to help, which some people might be like, well, you know, that's not an attitude you should really rely on. But when people do this stuff, I think people, as you say, want to sort of be around it, and people are very willing to help and sort of go out of their way. And, you know, if I needed a glass of water or something, people were always there to sort of help me along the way, sort of push me and guide me towards the end.
Yeah, and like, this is the thing, what I think people fail to forget is, like, we the human race, we want to do good by a fellow, like, brother or sister out there. It's a case of we want to be nice, we want to be kind, because if we truly didn't want to be nice or kind to our fellow human being, this world would be an apocalyptic nightmare where, yes, like, no doubt someone would be spraying silver spray in my face going witness on a regular basis. But thankfully, it's not like that. It is a good, like, the world for the most part is a good place. A world for the most part is an optimistic place. The world for the most part is a kind place. Yes, there are times where we don't find that out there, but it's a case of don't reside in the negative, look towards the positive. You'll be amazed at how people will come out to help one another in a time of need, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think on my podcast, we've spoken at length about this. I had a girl called Eva Zubek, who's a YouTuber or Instagrammer. She goes out and camps solo around the world in all sorts of unique and wonderful places, from Pakistan, Iran. And I said, you know, how many times have you come into trouble of all your times camping solo, you know, on your own? And she said, you can probably count it out of the hundreds, thousands of times on one hand, how many bad experiences I've had.
Yeah, I swear I watched a bit of a video where she was like saying she sometimes had to hunt monkeys or something like that. I might be wrong. So how did you get your podcast started? Because yes, you have, how can I say, some interesting people come on your podcast. And how do you find these people?
Well, it was really interesting because, of course, like over the years of doing this, you sort of build up, you find other people that are doing similar things. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm unique or special in any sort of way. And actually, with my podcast, I found exactly the same. A lot of people have different drives, different aspirations to do what they do. So, and sometimes it's from a really negative place. Sometimes it's with a positive frame of mind. So people's ideas or people's drive are very different. And so I'd sort of, you know, through Instagram had sort of got acquaintances with other people doing similar things. And I think lockdown had hit and I got injured training for one of my things, which had put me out of action. So I was sort of like, and I was doing a podcast like this. And, you know, as you say, you're just chatting about stuff you love. You're chatting about, you know, what you love doing. And so that was really my inspiration behind it, was just like, I love chatting about travel and adventure. Surely other people like chatting about that. And I got people on who had done similar things. And my intention was to try and discover like what drives people to do these things. Maybe similar to how you're probably itching at like what is driving this person. But that was sort of my intention, was to try and find out and see if there was like any correlation between all these explorers and adventurers. And after, I don't know, 65 episodes, it's sort of morphed into something else. And maybe I'm a little bit closer, but not sure, to finding out what is driving people.
No, I think it's one of those things, finding what drives people and motivates them on a sort of day-to-day basis can be, how can I put it, can be elusive at times, let's just say on the light side, and yeah, can be steeped in a deep, dark trauma on the other side of things. Like I wouldn't say heroes, but one of the people I admire out there who does crazy things on a regular basis you most probably know him, heard of him, David Goggins.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, his motivations and everything like this, yeah, comes from a place of like most probably, well, deep, dark trauma. But it's one of those things where I look upon what he's done and why he does this on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, he does it to like fortify his mind, fortify his spirit, to like take on the challenging things in life. Some people do it out of, yes, this is the thing what brings me absolute joy. And they can sit in the same room and they most probably be doing an ultra marathon at the same time. And you like go, it's like night and day from where you're like both coming from. But yet here you sit today. to like, yeah, see, test your mettle and to see how far you can go. Like, I have to ask, how far do you want to go? Because I know you're nursing a small back injury at this present time, but how far do you want to go, John?
So I think in terms of my physical drive, it's of course slowed with age. But
he's like, with age, he says in a softly delicate manner.
But no, like before my injury, I was very much aiming towards something, and through COVID and everything. But also, I think my intentions and my drive has changed, and my drive has much more become about telling stories. And actually, weirdly, this might sound really strange, but I actually struggle with the whole telling my story in terms of Instagram or social media. And I actually find it far more interesting hearing other people's stories and telling other people's story.
Right.
And so in terms of like my drive now, I'm training to be a journalist. So I've decided to go back to uni to study journalism. And so my idea now is just to tell stories and other people's stories who maybe, maybe put a positive spin on a negative countries, or just to try and tell, you know, people's stories who aren't being hurt. Because as you say, my story is not unique. There's a lot of people out there pushing the boundaries of their own physical and mental well-being. And I think as I was saying, it comes either from a really good intention. And as I said before, like my intention with America was probably not driven by something really, really positive. It was more driven by this sort of egotistical idea of myself and trying to, I don't know what the right word to sort of describe it is, but it was very much driven towards showing that it was more egotistical in a sense.
Well, I would say it came from a stance to, well, one, prove something to yourself, but the other to show everyone else that you could do it. So depending on how you look upon it, like some people might go, that's not a real positive thing to like take it from. And other people go, yeah, you know what I mean? You got to be out there setting challenges for yourself to prove that you can actually hit those challenges, hit those markers, because sometime in the future, you might need to dig deep and you might need that example to go, you remember when you were in this ship and you needed to help you get through that moment in time? Yeah. And I think with a lot of people, because of life, especially in the developed world, as we say, can be very comfortable. It can be very easy. And look, the amount of frustration, what can be held just from missing a tube train. I say this as a Londoner, when there's another tube train, maybe 1 minute away.
It's about perspective.
Yeah. And not having that perspective, or like, because you haven't faced like certain things which challenge you more than the regular day to day. Many of us, the vast majority of us, don't have that. The minority, the very few, like yourself, which I would say rare, like, yeah, top 1% of that, know this. And I don't know, like maybe like it helps you with other things which you'd like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I think as I said, like where what became of it was something really positive. And I would recommend people always challenge themselves. And as I think you alluded to David Goggins,
yeah,
you know, he builds up this mental resilience in himself. He does these things. So one time when something really bad happens, he has that mental strength to, you know, deal with it, you know, whether it's someone really close to him dying, he's there ready to be able to cope with it and doesn't break down. Someone who maybe doesn't, the idea of a tube or an Amazon package not coming on time is just like the worst thing in the world, and, you know, it breaks them down. And so, as you say, if you can have that perspective and know, you know that it's all going to be okay, there's another tube along the way, or the Amazon delivery will be here in an hour instead of at 12, as it said. It's just having that. And I would always encourage people to push themselves physically, mentally, because also you get a lot of satisfaction out of it when you finish doing these trips and you can look back. One, it's a good feeling to know that, but also the stories you get out of it are far more interesting than anything you can get in your day to day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, my final question, and if there was, if there was one thing you could do in the next, say, 6 months to a year as a venture you've not done before, and you had to take someone with you, what would that adventure be, and who would you take with you?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I would probably say, I've always had this, I've always had this sort of fascination with the cold and with somewhere like Antarctica. And so it would probably be down there, because in the next 6 months, it'll be the summer down there in 24-hour light. So it's a good place to go. But it will say, I think it'd just be really fascinating, this sort of complete white desert. And a couple of years ago, I had this idea of setting up something where, by people who couldn't do this sort of stuff, you know, maybe haven't got the motivation or the means or whatever it is holding them back, to just take random people who don't get the opportunity, because I'd probably just take a random person from, let's say, my Instagram, who has this sort of idea that they'd love to do it, and actually show them. Because that you get quite a lot of satisfaction out, is just showing people who don't have the opportunities.
Interesting. Ah, well, whoever that poor random person's going to be,
they better wrap up.
Well, indeed, and I wish them luck. John, I've got to say thank you for coming on today. Yeah, time is getting against me, and unfortunately, I could talk to you for hours and on end. Can you tell the lovely people how they can find you out on these interwebs?
Well, my Instagram is at John Horsfall, spelt like my name. And I'm also on, what else am I on? YouTube, where I have a video podcast. So you can see some of the crazy stories from other adventurers and explorers, which is at the Modern Adventurer podcast, which is on Apple and Spotify. My personal website is Zebra Adventures, Z-I-B-A adventures.com. And yeah, drop me a message if you have any questions, and always love to hear from everyone, really.
Perfect, perfect. All the information will be in the show notes, my friends, my life warriors. So yes, seek him out. Seek out the adventure with John. And yeah, let's see how far we can go. But until then, let me say this to you, my friends, my life warriors. Please stay well, stay safe, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive beings you can be in this world, and then some. Have a great day. Have a great day, guys. And yeah, keep pushing forward. Peace. And we are...